Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's what we know about the Tampa Bay Rays, and they're still having an historic season. So is, unfortunately for them, the rest of the American League East, including the Baltimore Orioles, who are only, at this point, 2.5 games back from those Tampa Bay Rays. They lost the game on Sunday, Steven, and we've seen sort of this play itself out, certainly did during the 10-game road trip, where, and they didn't have a lead. They came back, they tied it up on a Josh Lowe 3-run homer. And we'll talk about him. He's red hot right now. But the bullpen is just not what the bullpen has been for the Rays. And there's a lot of reasons for this. And we were talking about this before the podcast that, you know, when you lose so many starting pitchers and you're trying to make up those innings, you know, with maybe an opener and then guys in the bullpen taking bulk innings, et cetera, it's going to tax your bullpen. I mean, it just is. And guys are going to be in different roles. And, you know, we know who, you know, losing Pete Fairbanks for a while was definitely a problem because he's been their closer. He's back now. But there's no question that, and the Rays know this, that the weakness of this baseball team right now is their bullpen. And I think about the bullpens they've had in the past and especially what they've had down in Durham, and it seems like the well is a little dry down there right now. But, like, when you're – it's just that when you're coming at them with, you know, Kevin Kelly, who's done well, Rule 5 guy, you know, same is true with Trevor Kelly, who was, you know, signed in January when he was DFA'd by Milwaukee. And then, you know, you down in AAA, you know, you trade for Javi Gura, and he's been DFA'd as well. And then you signed Jake Diekman, who was released, and you claimed Zach Littell up waivers. That's not a good plan. Like, those aren't, that's not the plan. That was never the plan. But that's what the rest of the bullpen is kind of made of. And it's hurting them right now. Like, it just is. Like, we saw what they did on the road trip, coming off the road trip. They blew some leads, to say the least, scored a lot of runs. They're still scoring plenty of runs. But when they battled back to tie it on Sunday and Lau hit a 3-run homer, they couldn't hold it. And it wasn't even surprising. It was kind of like, yeah, that's kind of what their bullpen is right now. So that's going to be a story until they get to the point where teams are willing to consider themselves out of a race. And I know the Rays are trying to get help, but until they do, this is going to be a battle for them at this point. I mean, 2.5 back are the Baltimore Orioles, and the AL East is so strong. It's going to be a battle pretty much the first half.
Well, we've talked, look, going into the season, we talked about, boy, the Rays are going to have 5 starting pitchers, and it's going to be a traditional rotation. And
yeah,
they're back to using openers again because they're down Glass now, who hopefully, and he was dealing today in Durham to give up a home run, but hopefully he's back Friday against the Dodgers. But you're down Glass now. You're down Jeffrey Springs, who was 2-0 with a .56 ERA to start the season.
Yep.
You're down
yep.
Drew Rasmussen, who was 4-2 with a .262 ERA to start the season.
Crushing.
You know. And those guys are out basically for the season. I mean, Springs, we know, Rasmussen, too. You're down to 2 starters, and they've been fantastic. Zach Eflin, 6-1. McClanahan, 7-0. I mean, they've been fantastic. But you're back to using openers. And, you know, Cooper Criswell wouldn't be pitching in the major leagues at this point if those guys are healthy. I mean, he was called up.
Right.
And he was the bulk inning guy today. Taj Bradley's probably not up here, and he's looked pretty good, and you like what you see out of him. And that's been positive. But, you know, Josh Fleming is getting more starting or bulk inning guy because of that. You know, it's you know you're going to get injuries throughout a year. But when 3 of your 5 starters are out by May, you know, and Glass now you're getting back hopefully this week. So that helps. So now you're down 2, essentially, which that's a lot better than 3. I mean, if Glass now can start eating innings from a starting role, it makes the bullpen better. I mean, you've had to stretch your bullpen a lot. And to be honest, maybe some of the lack of work for the big guys in the bullpen early in the season is hurting too. I mean, they were winning all those games and there was no save opportunities.
They didn't need them.
I mean, they had such big leads. And we know that when you're a high leverage guy and you come in and when there's not high leverage, you pitch differently. You shouldn't, but we know it happens. We see it all over the league all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this lights out closer comes in because he hasn't pitched in 5 days and it's a 9-1 game and they give up 3 runs.
Yeah.
And you're like, what happened? Well, you know, when you're used to the high leverage, you know, maybe that's been part of why they haven't been as good. I mean, although, I mean, you know, Colin Poche's, what, he's 3-0 with a 1.72 ERA. I know
his numbers are fine.
Yeah. His numbers are fine. I'm trying to look up here. Pete Fairbanks with a 2 ERA. I mean, he gave up the home run the other day, but, you know, he's been good. You know, their bullpen, it's just been stretched, and it's stretched a lot further than they had hoped at this point of the season, and a lot more innings for the bullpen than they hoped because you're down 3 starting pitchers.
Yeah. I mean, it's recency bias for sure, but, I mean, I just think, and this is purely by my memory, and we can do a whole show on injuries and why, at least in my mind, it seems like the Rays have as much or more than their share of arm injuries, especially to some of the guys that they count on the most. But here's a line, and I remember John Romano tweeted this out during the game because I'm watching the game, and you know Cooper Criswell, who normally wouldn't be in this situation maybe as a bulk innings guy, if not for all those injuries you mentioned. The first 12 batters he faced, he gave up 2 singles, 2 doubles, 2 homers, and hit a guy. And it was 5-3. And they just recaptured the lead at 3-0. So, you know, that's discouraging, disappointing. I go back to discouraging. It is not – you in no way started the season saying a guy named Cooper Criswell would be pitching meaningful innings for you with the hottest start in franchise history, if not one of the hardest in baseball history, and be sitting here kind of scuffling along. And that's kind of what they're doing. Really, since the middle of that road trip, I guess.
They've used 24 pitchers this year already. They're 48
games
in.
Did they have the most last year, too? I mean,
they used 37 pitchers, technically 40 pitched, but 3 or more position players.
Okay.
So they used 37 pitchers last year. I don't know if that was a record or not. I don't remember.
Right.
The Dodgers used a bunch, too. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But in 48 games, they've used 24 pitchers. And presumably they're going to get 25 this week when Tyler Glass now pitches.
Right.
And if not others, too.
That's crazy.
You know, and some of their pitchers haven't been as good as you hope. Ryan Thompson has not been nearly as good as he was last year. They sent him down to AAA to call up Criswell. But, you know, part of it is he has options, but the other part is he hasn't pitched well. He's given up, 11 runs in 15 innings?
And another guy that they had hoped would emerge as a starter is Luis Patino, who's been working out in Durham. And if he does come back, he may have to go to the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, they're moving him to the bullpen in Durham, basically.
Yeah.
So Calvin Foché hasn't been nearly as good. He's given up 10 runs in 14 innings this year. I mean, you've got some pitchers that just haven't done as well as you'd hoped.
Right.
You know, Jalen Beeks has given up 13 runs in 25 innings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not what the Rays are looking for. And he's given up 12 walks in those 25 innings. I mean, some of the walks have been... You know, Ryan Thompson, 7 walks in 15 innings. That's a walk every other inning.
Yeah. Well, even their starters, we talked about Shane McClanahan, and he's got more bases on balls than we've ever seen before, too.
And I don't know if the pitch clock has something to do with it, if they're just rushing through things.
Oh, I do.
And
I absolutely
it probably does.
Yeah.
As they're making adjustments. And the Rays are doing a good job taking walks themselves, too. So I'm sure it's affecting the opposing pitchers as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It just seems to be like listen, the offense continues to swing the bats. They're so deep. They're bringing guys off the bench, putting them in different situations. Everybody's pulling the same direction. And you mentioned Josh Lowe a minute ago. Is there a hotter hitter in the American League right now, or maybe in baseball, coming off the road trip he had? And not just home runs, but home runs in huge moments. Like I said, you know, you're down 3-0 and you're not really doing anything. You know, offensively in that game, you get a couple of walks, and with one swing, and it was a line drive home run, you've tied the game. This guy has hit, what, since the road trip, this is like his 5th home run.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, what, 11 on the season or something like that?
11 home run. Let me drop this on you.
Yeah.
And we're 48 games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, meanwhile, Josh Lowe's only played 38 of them. But I'll take his numbers into 48 games because presumably sure. He's not going to play every game going forward because the Rays, you typically don't.
With they him. Don't do that, yeah.
He's on pace for 37 home runs and 30 stolen bases.
Phew, man.
He's batting .318 with an OPS of 1.027. Like, a week ago, we said Yandy Diaz or Randy Rosarena's your MVP on this team.
Candidate.
It's Josh Lowe right now, if it's not McClanahan or Eflin.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah.
From the offensive side, it's Josh Lowe right now.
Incredible.
I mean, he's got 11 doubles, 11 homers, 9 stolen bases, and batting .318. He's second on the team in average behind Yandy Diaz, which good to see him back. And when he's in that lineup, a lot better, man.
Different, yeah.
Even if he can't run, which you can tell he's nursing that groin.
Mm-hmm.
But he can still swing the bat.
Yes, he can. And he's having an MVP-like year. They've swung the bats. It's just that's the disheartening thing. I think if you're probably a Rays fan, you're thinking, wow, after all this time of waiting for an offense, now you have this offense and they have all these pitchers hurt. The bullpen's not what it quite should be. And you're struggling on the mound a little bit. You know, I mean, not McClanahan, not some of your frontline starters, but you're right. You're down some guys. Glasnow pitched his last rehab start in Durham and was lights out. And the good news is you haven't heard anything else about any aches or pains. And so,
well, he pitched on Sunday, so he'll be at the Trop presumably Monday. And we'll get an update then. He may speak to the media as well, but Kevin Cash will have an update.
Sure, sure. But sooner than later, he's going to be, I would think,
Friday. He's basically penciled in for Friday at this point.
Okay.
Assuming he comes back, there's no issues. And he pitched Sunday. Friday will be presumably when he's going to start against the Dodgers.
And he stretched out a little. He went 6 innings on Sunday. Which
only 67 pitches,
amount.
Which is – he was only scheduled to go 5 innings, I believe, but he was so efficient they gave him a 6th inning.
Right. No, he looks great. And, again, that's against Triple-A hitters, but when you're coming off the kind of injury that he had and the talent that he has, velocity's there. The breaking ball was stupid.
Yep.
Just some of the replays that I saw. So, I mean, you know, that's – to get a guy like that, a top-of-the-rotation guy back this early in the season is a real bonus. Hopefully keep him healthy. They've had the injuries, there's no doubt. It's just that we heard so much about left-handed bats, and it's ironic that the left-handed bat is now, like you said, an MVP candidate in Josh Lowe. And did they foresee all these injuries to their pitching staff? Well, that's kind of been also what's gone on with the Rays over the last few years, is they've gotten guys hurt, including starters. You don't anticipate losing two of them maybe in the first month and a half, and that happened. But still in all, I didn't hear a lot about, you know, hey, we got to build up this bullpen. And the other part of it is, it's not just the bullpen. It's sort of like the what you're used to with the Rays. Or maybe if you look around baseball, it just seems, you know, the Rays, you mentioned Thompson, and he's not been as good. Deceptive delivery, hard thrower, was lights out last year, not so good this year. But for the most part, I just remember Kevin Cash with his famous quota, we got a whole stable of guys that can throw 98. They don't anymore. And the swing and miss is what is, frankly, missing from the Rays right now, that when these guys make a mistake or get the ball over the plate too much, they're getting hit hard, and it's costing them. And that's what I'm not – you know, if you've watched the Rays, you're kind of used to seeing those one after the other come out of the bullpen with you know, swing and miss stuff, and you just don't see that as much. So – I mean, they got time to iron it out. It's got to be their number one priority going into, you know, before the trading deadline and all of that stuff, which is down the road, I know. But teams are not going to rule themselves out of anything.
Well, a couple things for them, too. And the swing and miss stuff is a problem, but the home run ball has been a problem of late.
Exactly, yes.
37 of their last 48 runs given up have been via the home run.
Jeez. That's crazy.
It goes back to the start of the Yankees series last week.
That's crazy. Wow.
37 of 48 runs have been via home run.
Just keep it in the yard,
and
boys.
And the problem is you walk someone, then you give up the home run. And instead of a solo shot, it's a two-run shot.
That's the biggest thing that I've seen that's the difference, Steve, is what you just said. The home run ball, obviously, but the walk, the bases on balls as a staff, even counting Shane McClanahan, has been way higher than normal.
Mm-hmm. And the other part, too, and it's ironic that all offseason talked about needing a left-handed bat, left-handed bat, left-handed bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that the Rays have the least amount of at-bats against left-handed pitching this year? which means they've been facing all righties, and this is the offensive surge they're having. They started the season, they faced a lot of lefties like the first 2 weeks, and since then, they've almost faced no lefties.
That's weird.
It's been almost
right?
all righties.
An anomaly.
It's yeah. been weird. Mm-hmm. And some of it's injuries to other teams and that, but even though they're facing all righties, where that's where you need your left-handed bats.
That's where you need
they've
them.
They've been
yeah.
having a phenomenal offensive season. It's really incredible of what they thought their needs were in the offseason. Sure. And you got guys like Taylor Walls having a career year. Mm-hmm. Cheating, of course. You've got Josh Lowe. He's cheating, too, obviously. You know, Isak Paredes, probably cheating, although he's a right-handed bat. But my point is you know, the offensive surge, but a lot of this has been against right-handed batters.
Yeah, good story in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times. I think it was Sunday. And you can read it on TampaBay.com. Mark Topkin did a story on the cheating Taylor Walls. And Walls is very understanding of it. I mean, he was funny. He was like, well, you know, if you saw what I've done up till now, I can see why somebody would say, you know. And obviously he's not cheating, but he's made some adjustments, as has a mm-hmm. lot of hitters mm-hmm. in that lineup. And so many of them, like Lowe, were just getting their first taste in the major leagues. I mean, it's very rare for a guy to come up, hit it in his first month and a half, and never go down again. You know, there's not many Alex Rodriguez's out there. Mm-hmm. There's usually an adjustment period where you'll come up, you might have success early, then pitchers adjust to you, they get a book on you, and now you've got to adjust back. Listen, I got news for you. That happens at every level. Happened to me in college baseball, man. I was wearing it out for about 3 weeks, and then I never saw another fastball the rest of the season. They knew how to get me out. So, you know, you can just imagine when you're playing at that level just how quick teams are to make changes and how quick you have to learn to adjust to never seeing the pitch you want to hit. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and so those guys have done that now, and now they've come back and they're different. They look like different players. I mean, Josh Lowe looks yep. like a different player. And as you mentioned, can run, can steal bases. They had a double steal. Like, they set themselves up. They had chances mm-hmm. to come back and win that game.
Sure did.
They just weren't able to get the big hit.
Speaking of cheating, did you see the Yankees, another pitcher?
What?
Maybe had some sticky stuff on his hands, although the umpires only
really?
Made him wash his hands.
Really? Okay, what is the rule here? So they check their hands, and they're looking for stickiness.
I don't know if he had too much rosin on his hands or whatever, but it was in Cincinnati on Friday.
They allow
night.
Him to go wash their hands. Yeah. Like, I don't, yeah. Are you breaking the rules, or are you just like, you need to just, because I say this to my kids all the time when they touch me. I'm like, hey, when's the last time you washed your hands? Your hands are kind of tacky here. You might want to go wash them. Is that what we're talking about, or are we just talking about?
Look, either you have too much sticky stuff on your hands, or you don't. There's not this. Oh, go wash your hands. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, what is
too much or it's not? And I don't know what the rule is or what constitutes too much. But not just go wash your hands. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's like what I tell my kid: go wash your hands. Like, he's like, no. If you're not allowed to have tackiness, now there's a certain amount of tack that'll come from the rosin bag and sweat. Mm-hmm. But you would think you'd know what that threshold is. But if you're sending a guy in to wash his hands, it means he's got something that's too tacky. So shouldn't at that point you be thrown out of the game? I don't know. It seems weird. I think they've gone, you know, there are some things baseball does and all sports does where you swing the pendulum too far one way and you got to bring it back. I think this whole stick'em thing, and again, I'm not a guy that, you know, can tell you what spin rate and grip and, mm-hmm. you know, what that does to a hitter with this guys that throw as hard as some of these dudes do. I'm sure it's a huge advantage to be able to tack up the ball that way. But I just know as a hitter, man, if a guy's throwing 98, I want him to be able to have control of it. I just do.
No, you want him to have control, but the baseball wants more offense. So,
yeah.
The less spin.
That's what it's about.
The less spin.
That's what it's about.
The easier it is to hit.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's another. We talked about walks. Maybe that's why walks are up.
It's possible, too. Although last year they were doing the sticky stuff check, too. But
yeah, that's true. I mean, some of these guys I can't explain. They're just not, mm-hmm. you know, McClanahan's not pitching the way he typically, and he knows it. He doesn't have the command that he's had in the past. But, yeah, it's just it's kind of a interesting year in baseball, and especially can you remember? I mean, the American League East has always been that division, right? That seemed mm-hmm. deeper and better than most in baseball. It's not unusual to say, well, they're the best division in baseball. Have you ever seen more of a disparity, though, in a singular season than what American League has 30 plus win teams?
And I think you're going to see more disparity this year because you're facing each other less. Like the American League East, you played each team 19 times in the past. Now it's 13 or 14. So now you're taking, 24 more games against the AL Central, the NL Central, which is bad.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to face each other less, which means they're going to beat up on the other teams more, which is what the AL East has done this year.
That's true.
The AL East is, the AL East records for these teams. The Rays are 10-7, Baltimore's 9-6, Yankees 9-8. I mean, they're all about 500. Toronto's a little bit under 5-12. But go through like the AL Central. The Rays are 9-1 against. Baltimore's 10-3. Yankees are 7-6. Boston 7-2. Toronto 8-2. They're beating up on the Central.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, if you're that good of a division, you know, the AL Central stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, the Twins are three games above. The Twins are tied with Toronto, who's last in the AL East. And then every other team is four games or more below 500.
Well, ask yourself this. I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays are in last place right now in the American League East. They're 25-22.
Yep.
I would bet that in some divisions that might be close to leading it.
They'll be tied with Minnesota for the AL Central lead.
Yeah.
You'd be a half game behind Milwaukee for the NL Central lead.
I mean.
Yeah. And Toronto's problem is they're 5-12 against the AL East.
That's true. Yeah, they can't beat
the other AL East teams are about 500, within two to three games of 500. They're seven games below 500 against the East.
Yep. They're getting beat by their own division,
but
beating up everybody else. I mean, you know, the Yankees are just one win shy of 30. They're 29-20. You already have two 30-win teams. You got the Rays at 34-14. And then the Orioles, of course, they picked this season, if you're a Rays fan, for the Orioles to have a breakout year. 31-16 already, just 2.5 back. I'm sorry, you got 34-14, you're 20 games over 500, and you're going, wait a minute, we only have a 2.5 game lead? Would anybody have thought that was possible? 20 games over 500? I mean, that's crazy,
well,
right?
Well, the best two teams in baseball are in the same division. And Texas and Atlanta are ahead of the Yankees. They're 29-17.
Okay.
So the Yankees, if you take
same number of wins.
Yeah, you take and the Dodgers are 29-19. So actually, Yankees are the sixth best team in baseball record-wise, but.
Not bad. Mm-hmm. Not a bad division.
Yeah, I mean, all the AL East teams would be, the five teams would be top seven in the AL. Only Texas and Houston are better than Toronto in the AL, in the American League. So,
I mean, it's going to be a battle. I mean, them and Baltimore, I think Baltimore's for real. We've seen them. They took two out of three last time in this last road trip. Their bullpen is, now they have the bullpen you want. Their bullpen has been stellar.
Yeah, their high leverage A bullpen is phenomenal.
Whew. I mean, those two guys, they get two or three guys actually that come in, and they do throw 98 and then some. So they're really, really good. So, you'd hate to say that by, I don't know, Memorial Day, what if you might not be in first place? It's just weird, man. It's like.
No, you're 2.5 games out, really. By the end of this week, you could be. Technically,
you could be out. Yeah, you could be looking up at another team, and it's just crazy. And the way they've gotten here, because years and years and years, pitching and defense. You know, it's run prevention, not accumulation. And now all of a sudden, you have all these runs. You have three guys having MVP seasons, if not four, and you're deep 1-12 really on the bench. And now you're struggling a little bit in the bullpen. You got starters hurt, so. Maybe Glass changes that when he comes back. We'll see. But it was just one of those days where you just look at the names. You look at the names down there and you go, Rule 5 guy, DFA'd guy, another DFA'd guy, guy you DFA'd. Like, it's just not the pedigree that the Rays would normally try to play with.
You know, I'm just looking through bullpen's stats. The amount of blown saves. I mean, I don't know if this is higher than normal. But I'll go through the teams, and this is in ERA order, but Yankees have blown 6 saves. The Astros have blown 5. The Orioles, 10 saves. The Mariners, 8.
Orioles, 10?
Now, granted,
how that happened.
It may not always be their A bullpen. I mean, you may have a tie game in the 7th.
That's true.
You know, I mean, you know, the Cleveland's blown 12 saves. The Angels 10. Tigers 6. The Red Sox 5. Twins 10. The Rays 10.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just that's not what we expect from the Rays.
No. No, it's not. And especially in contrast to the fact that they're scoring a lot of runs. You know, when you lose, when you have the lead and you score 8 runs in a couple games that you don't end up shaking hands, you know, after the final out, that's what's unusual about it. But as they say, a good friend of mine likes to say, that's baseball. So we'll talk more about the Rays, I'm sure, as the week goes on. And I had a mailbag question that we can get to later in this week if we don't get to it tonight. First, I want to tell you how to save money, though, on your electric bill. It's May Electric Solar. They're a family-owned business. They've been installing solar electric systems in the area now for 13 years. There's a lot of these companies out there knocking on your door, but I'm telling you, May Electric Solar, they're committed to you for the long term. How long? Will they guarantee their workmanship with a 30-year labor and services warranty? Plus, with every installation, you get $750 worth of surge protection for all your appliances. That's what they call the May difference. If you visit their Hudson showroom, May Electric displays all their products. They conduct on-site testing. You can see what they'll install. Plus, they don't use subcontractors, so you know exactly who is doing the job. Start saving today. Call the solar energy experts at May Electric Solar at 727-819-2862. You can schedule a free estimate, lower your electric bill all year long, preserve the quality of your appliances. That's May Electric Solar at 727-819-2862. Speaking of the Rays, there was a report in The Athletic on Sunday that the Rays are getting inquiries from prospective ownership groups that might have an interest in moving the team out of the market, as well as Tampa businessman Dan Doyle Jr. So, I think the last part is news. The Dan Doyle Jr. part?
Yeah. I think the fact that the Rays are looking for a stadium and other people are interested in buying the team to move it. Yeah, I think that happens with that. I think the Oakland A's probably had the same thing. I think any team that's got questions on stadiums.
Yep.
And the other part of this is who benefits by this story coming out?
The Rays.
Uh-huh.
Totally do.
I mean, do I think Stu Sternberg's selling this team? No.
Yeah. But if somebody came through with a whopper of an offer, it's like my house is not up for sale, Steve, but I promise you, first one that walks by and wants to give it me $1 million, I'll think about it.
I suppose there probably is a number, but I don't think Stu's looking. Now, could he sell a minority interest to the team? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jeff Vinnick just did that a couple seasons ago with the Lightning.
Yeah.
Sold off 20-25%, whatever it was, to some investors. Non-controlling interest, and you know he has full control still, but you take some money out. Basically, the team's worth a lot more than you paid for it, so you sell 20-25% and bring a lot of cash in.
Sure.
Do I think Stu's looking to sell? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Do I think he's looking to negotiate the best stadium deal? Of course.
Hmm.
Do I think Mr. Doyle is interested in buying a team, or particularly if Stu wants to sell, he would like to purchase it to keep it here? I absolutely do. But I don't think this is much of a news story. I mean, I think there's, look, the way sports franchises values keep going up, there's always people looking to buy teams.
Everybody wants a piece of that because you're right. The value in the franchise is in the equity that you gain, the franchise values that seem to go up so rapidly every year. Look at the NFL. I think the Washington Commanders are going to sell for excess of $6 billion with a B, first franchise to do that. Mm-hmm. Doyle, by the way, is the chairman of a Tampa-based company, DSX Imaging.
Yeah, Dex Imaging.
And that's one of their main sponsors. His father, Dan Doyle Sr., was part of the Rays' original ownership group with Vince Namoli going back in the 90s. So he has that. And it reminds me a little bit of, Not the same thing, because this was a franchise that was going to be sold. When Hugh Culverhouse died, the Culverhouse Trust ran the football team for a couple of years. And so there were three gentlemen, including Stephen Story and Rich McKay, who were part of that charitable trust that the team was owned by. And so they were going to sell it. It didn't have, the sale didn't happen right away. But there were a lot of groups, including the Glazers, that were not just potential buyers, but maybe a buyer that would then relocate the team. So when that happened, when the threat of maybe losing the football team occurred, there were several groups, one led by George Steinbrenner, that emerged, you know, that wanted to purchase the Bucks and keep them in Tampa. That was their sole reason for doing it, was getting a group together that would say, no, we'll make it work here. Would you sell us the team? Now, their bid wound up not being the winning bid, and as it turns out, the Glazers were at least willing to find a solution in Tampa before they moved on. And, of course, we've talked about the Baltimore situation. I think that's where they were probably headed, until the Cleveland Browns and Art Modell surprised everybody and moved there and took away their leverage. But they wound up getting a stadium, and the rest is history. So, yeah, I think these things happen when community leaders realize that, you know what, rather than the team get out of here, maybe we can convince the owner to sell it to somebody who has a local interest that will keep it here. So that part's not surprising. And
well, the other part, you know, is if you sold the Rays, if Stu sold the Rays, I don't know mm-hmm. what the figure would be, but let's say it's $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion, somewhere in that range, maybe. Baseball's looking to expand in the future. Most likely mm-hmm. those expansion fees are going to be north of $2 billion. Mm-hmm. It's a lot cheaper to buy a team and then move it where you want it than to create an expansion team. And so the Rays are the only team now. I mean, A's presumably are moving to Vegas. So the Rays are the only team now with a stadium deal coming up and no definitive answer yet as to what they're going to do. Or where they can get a stadium, get the best deal. They're working on the St. Pete and building on the Trop and then creating the mixed use, you know, shops and condos and all that stuff there. Yep. And presumably that's what they want to do, it seems like. And it seems like things are moving forward, but it's not a done deal yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a baseball team, no matter who you are or where you'd like it to be, it's cheaper to go buy the Rays and try to move them than to get an expansion team.
Absolutely.
And so, there are lots of investors that are stepping up and would love to buy the Rays. I completely think that's very plausible and probably very true. And if Stu Sternberg fielded calls, I'm sure he has. But I don't mm-hmm. think he's interested in selling. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't think he's actively interested. I mean, I think, you know, there's probably people that approach him a lot about it, knowing his situation, but I think he is more invested, so to speak, literally and figuratively, in trying to find a solution in Tampa Bay. And you're right. I think that real estate deal that they're part of, the development deal, if you will, in St. Petersburg, looks to be something that would be, you know, revenue producing for him and for their franchise, irregardless of attendance and things like that. Which the attendance, you know, it's funny when you win, they've had very good crowds. And they've always won, but to this level, obviously, there's a special group of guys and something special going on here this year that people want to be a part of, and it's become the thing to do. And so they're off to a pretty good start attendance-wise. We'll see what happens if that keeps up. But, yeah, I think you know, Sternberg's, I mean, he's been through the stadium game now for a number of years. If he wanted to do something other than find a solution, and we knew that they had the flirtation with the whole Montreal half-season thing, he would have done it by now, but I think they truly, and baseball wants them to stay. So hopefully that'll be what they do, but you can check out, the story in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. We'll leave you with this. I wrote a story in the Tampa Bay Times about the Bucks rookie class. And I think it's not to go overlooked that not all of them, but certainly a good number of players that they drafted, are guys that have a ton of college football experience. I mean, if you remember, you had the COVID year, which was, 2020, where some conferences didn't play more than a few games, some not at all. But regardless of that, they granted an extra year of eligibility. Typically, you have 5 years to play four, unless you get a medical redshirt or something like that, an exemption. So, you know, between guys that may have redshirted naturally because they were freshmen and teams that maybe didn't play them the requisite number of games, or they were hurt, or maybe they got into the transfer portal, you started to see guys, especially this year, come out that had been in college football some of them, incredibly, for 6 years. I could have been a professional student. I loved the college life. I don't know if I could have done it for 6 years, certainly not in Jonesboro, Arkansas, but you know, you just take a guy like Josh Hayes, who is Geno Hayes' nephew, and he played 68 games of college football. 68. He won 3 national championships in 4 years with North Dakota State, FCS national championships. Then he played 3 games at Virginia. He, you know, this is the other part that has happened in college football, which is extended guys' number of years there, is that he transferred from North Dakota State to Virginia, but he only played 3 games, and he got hurt. And then he finished his last season, like, at Kansas State. You have a guy like Cody Mauch. He played 62 games at North Dakota State. Jose Ramirez started his college career at Arizona in 2017. You know, was out of football for a year out of high school. Was throwing bags at the Hartsfield Airport there in Atlanta. He wound up playing 48 games during stops with the River City College, which is JUCO in California, and then Eastern Michigan. So what do you, you know, in con, like, just these, those 3 players coming in as rookies, they're 24 years old. Like, they're 24. That's the same age as Joe Tryon Shoyinka and just a year younger than Kyle Trask. And those guys are entering their 3rd season. So, you know, if you took a guy like Shoyinka, as the Bucks did back in the day, he only had 14 career starts at Washington because he was one that opted out of the COVID-19 year in 2020 and then just got ready for the draft and was their first-round pick in 2021. And what have you gotten from him? A lot of inconsistency, right? A guy still learning to play the position but having to learn in the NFL level. But it's interesting that, you know, the pandemic is going to produce more and more of these guys. They've spent a ton of time. Plus, you know, there's not, if you're not a high draft pick, there's maybe not the urgency to get money because of the NIL deals that some of these guys are getting in college. So that incentive isn't as dire. And so what does it mean? Well, the kind of players you're going to get are guys that have obviously played a lot of football at a very high level. And I think the more you play, the less development that's required. And so in the maturity, you like them as you know, there's a difference between a 20-year-old and 24-year-old maturity-wise, the discipline that they have, you know, so many things, and they've seen so many different systems. And they know how to play the game, and they learn faster. And so I think in many cases they're going to find out that these guys might have a more immediate impact than some kid that's, you know, 21 years old that maybe played 2 full seasons in college and was a redshirt sophomore when he came out, you know. So all that remains to be seen. But anyway, check it out. It's in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finally, some other sports over the weekend. There was a major tournament played in golf. Brooks Koepka wins his 5th major championship, his 3rd PGA Tour championship, the Wanamaker Trophy.
Third in 6 years. He's only the 2nd golfer to ever do that, to win the PGA championship 3 times in 6 years.
Really? Wow.
Joining Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah. Well, I remember him.
Not even Tiger's done that.
He's only the 20th player in history of golf to win 5 majors. Think about that. I mean, you're a Hall of Fame golfer, mm-hmm. clearly. And, you know, Koepka was on a run like nobody's business, and then he ended up injuring his knee and was at a point where he didn't know if he was going to be able to get his game back and be able to play again. And then, of course, he did. A lot of controversy because he joined LIV Golf. LIV Tour was paid like $100 million to play in the Saudi, backed golf league. but because, you know, they wouldn't allow him to play PGA events, is able to play in the major tournaments, and then he comes back and wins it fairly handily on Sunday. That was fun. And then but there's a bigger story about an amateur golfer that captured all the attention, right?
Yeah, Michael Block, who finished 15th, which means he's qualified for next year's PGA Championship. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to qualify for the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. And he's also got a sponsor exemption for this week's tournament, so he'll participate then. But he also had the only hole-in-one of the tournament on the par 3 15th on Sunday, so finished one over par for the tournament. Just incredible.
He was a local favorite because of the PGA. There's 20 PGA pros that qualify for this tournament, and he was one of the 20. And you're right, you have to finish in the top 15. He, by the way, had to get an up and down on 18 where he hit it almost to the grandstand and chipped and putted in on the final hole to make that exemption. And he was the story. He captured everybody's imagination almost from the beginning. Of course, New York fans were going crazy about it. His hole in one, he flew it in there. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you'll see, when you see holes in ones, you typically, I don't know, I see one bounce or two and then straighten the cup or whatever. This one, you know, from the stick, I don't even know if it hit. It actually left a divot. I've mm-hmm. never seen this. It left a divot on the cup because it came in so hard and so linear to the edge of the cup that it actually bent the grass towards.
He didn't know it went
the
in.
Hole.
He thought it. No. He thought he hit it well. He knew. He thought, I'm within 5 or 10 feet.
I'm on the green. Yeah.
There's the crowd starts cheering. Roy McIlroy comes over and gives him a hug, and he's like, "What? What?"
He hugs him up.
He's like, "Did it go in?" Roy's like, "Yes, it went in."
Must have been a good shot, I guess. Roy really liked it. I just thinking I was like on the green. Yeah, no, he holed it, and then Koepka, he was congratulating him after his round and after he won, and Koepka goes, "I understand that the drinks are on you tonight." It's like, yep, which I always thought shouldn't other people buy you drinks if you hit the hole in one? Like,
particularly the pros. Although he's at 15th, he'll get a decent payday.
Oh yeah, he will. More money than he's probably made in his life. Possibly. I don't know. I don't know what you make as a PGA pro at a golf course. But anyway, it was good theater, and he was the most popular golfer, even more popular than Koepka, I think, at times. He played with Roy McIlroy, though. It was really good to see Roy's reaction. Roy has been killing it. I mean, he's been in the top 10 so many times this year, but just can't get quite over the hump for another major. So, but yeah, good event. And then how about the NBA and the NHL playoffs? Let's talk about that. There's already a team in each up 2-0 in the series.
Yeah, the hockey conference finals have been fantastic.
They've been great. I mean, there was, a 4 overtime game the other night?
There's been 4 games played in the conference finals, 4 overtimes.
Incredible.
Now, Vegas and Florida both lead 2 games to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get the NBA, where both series are now 3-0.
Yeah.
And the East particularly hasn't even been close. Lakers keep taking the early lead, and then Denver comes back and beats them.
They wear them down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's been kind of – the NBA's been a snooze. I'm not a big NBA guy, so I catch little bits of it here and there.
Right.
But it's like the Heat-Celtics game tonight, not competitive. Like,
which is surprising and disappointing if you're – I mean, mm-hmm. I think Miami was always better than an 8 seed. They had a bunch of injuries, and they got healthy at the right time. And, I mean, Jimmy Butler, he's been unbelievable. But mm-hmm. So a little less surprising. Like the other – out west, like as far as the Lakers go, it was funny. Like after game 2 when Denver won, game 1 was pretty competitive. Everybody's like, well, you know, Lakers figure some things out here. I think, you know – they get one of these, they're fine. They're just fine, and then they lose. And then the Denver coach comes out and says, "Oh yeah." After game 1, the narrative was, "Oh, they're fine. Lakers are great. Yeah, they're good. They figured something out. Yeah, they're fine." And now they're down 2-0. Now what do you get? Here's what I want to say. Yeah, it is about the Lakers. You know why? Because they get the best players in the world. They got LeBron James, mm-hmm. right? Even though Denver Nuggets has a 2-time MVP and all that, no one's going, "Let's root for Denver." You know, unless you're from the Rocky Mountain area, I suppose.
Although you tend to forget they were the best team in the West. I mean, there's a reason that they're dominating the way they are. And
oh, yeah, it's not an accident. They've been great, but they're still, like, no matter what, they're the Denver Nuggets, man. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like, You're talking about the Lakers, man. What are we talking about? We're talking about the Lakers. We're talking about LeBron, right? So obviously it's going to be about the Lakers. It's always going to be about the Lakers if the Lakers are in it. But that, yeah, Denver's about to either maybe sweep this series or win very easily up 3-0. And then, of course, like you said, Miami, Boston's been disappointing. But can you imagine? I mean, I don't know. I don't know a lot about TV, but I do know this. I think if it's Denver, Miami, I don't think those ratings are going to be very high.
I think the networks were definitely hoping for LA, Boston.
LA, Boston.
Whichever network's got the final this year. I don't know if it's ESPN or TNT, but whichever one has it, I'm sure they were hoping for Boston, LA.
You play the replay. You play the clips of the history with Magic and Bird, and you know what I mean? Like, you got all of that, right?
Yep.
Beat LA, chance. Would have been great, but not likely to happen now because they're down 3-0. Who do you like? I think that Florida's going to win the entire thing. I think Florida's going to win the Stanley Cup. Look, what's their record on the road in these playoffs? Like 6-1 or something crazy like that?
They've been incredible, and they're almost beating Carolina at Carolina's game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Granted, it's been two overtime games. I mean, those things can go either way. One went four overtimes, but.
Right.
But Florida's, they came together at the right time. That Matthew Tkachuk trade that they got ripped for a little bit early in the season.
Yeah.
Offseason, I mean, he's exactly what that team needed. You know, we saw them the last few seasons, kind of a soft team that didn't have a lot of fight in the playoffs. Boy, he drags his team into the fight.
Yes, he does.
And he's been spectacular for them. That was a really good trade for Florida.
Yeah. No, they look like the team to beat. And we'll see. In the other series, of course, it's Las Vegas against Dallas, right? Yeah.
And Sergei Bobrovsky for Florida has been spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
know
where
that name.
You know, we always talk about in hockey, it's who's your goalie.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things when you look at the four teams left, the team that you expected to have the best goalie was Dallas with Jake Oettinger. Mm-hmm. Vegas is kind of going back and forth. So is Carolina. Bobrovsky has, you know, a couple good playoff series, but he's been out of his mind this playoffs. This is the best he's played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why they're winning. Is they've got a goalie now. There's no question at Florida who's that goalie right now.
Yeah.
No question. And that's huge in the playoffs.
That name sounds familiar, Columbus, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, he beat the Lightning when they had the best regular season ever, one of them, and then he beat Boston this year when they had the best regular season ever.
That's right. I mean, think about who they beat Boston. They did Toronto. They didn't have home ice for either series.
And now Carolina.
And now they're up 2-0 in Carolina, so didn't have home ice for them either.
Nope.
Yeah, so they just have that look. And
they won't have home ice against Vegas either, assuming that is the matchup.
Which they're fine. They're fine with not having home ice this year. That's just kind of the way they're playing. But, yeah, so the Stanley Cup may have a tan again, only a little south of here, maybe in Miami. All right, the Rays will start their series against the Toronto Blue Jays. So that's one of those division series in the AL East. Mm-hmm. And let's see what they can do against Toronto and see if they can extend their lead at all or maintain it. 2.5 games over Baltimore. Kind of hard to believe that you can have that kind of a start and still only have a 2.5 game lead with 20 games over 500. We'll be back to talk more this week. We've got the Bucks starting their OTAs on Tuesday. So we'll be out there at the Advent Healthcare Center to talk to some players, some veteran players, I would think, that are come about. And that'll be going on for the next 4 weeks until we get to a mandatory mini camp, June 13th through 15th, I want to say. And then it's off for probably about a month or so, a little over a month, until they get back to training camp and they start the real thing. So not that far away, even though we haven't quite ended the last season in some respects. So we'll have more about that in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. Thanks for listening. For Steve Bursnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.